Gardening can be a real pleasure, but even when you take good care of your plants, nature doesn't always cooperate. And those torrential rains that we've experienced across most of the state really caused some problems for our gardens, I think. That's on top of the usual plant diseases we see anyway. Larry Mueller here. Great to talk plant diseases with you today on this edition of Garden Talk with our two guests, Brian Huddleston, Director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison in the Department of Plant Pathology. Dr. Death, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me again. Haven't worn out my welcome yet.
No, no, nor has Liz Freemuth. Liz, as previously she was a horticulturist for Walworth County. She now owns the Garden Hoe. It's a passion for healthy and happy plants. She provides concierge horticultural services here in Wisconsin, across the country, actually.
Yeah, I've got clients all over, and thanks for having me again. I don't know how we have not managed to wear out our welcome, but we haven't so far.
No, you haven't, I'm telling you. And eager to talk to you, especially with all the rain that we've had, especially in June. What problems might we be receiving here as a result of all that rain? Root rots?
Lots and lots. Well, first thing that comes to mind to me are lots and lots of fungal leaf spots because getting the leaves wet, and a lot of the rain came at the time when the trees were beginning to leaf out, and that's kind of a critical time for a lot of fungal infections to occur. Certainly root rots are an issue that we've been seeing some of. Actually, the big thing that I've been seeing in the clinic is a lot of carryover effects from the long winter, so winter injury. Particularly, I told some folks this morning, if I never see another fruit tree with dieback ever again, I will be happy. Lots of apples and cherries coming in with dieback where we can't really find any disease cause, and it looks like it's environmental.
Yeah, the collapse. And I'm seeing that, too, with clients, that the things are just, they're just gone.
Right.
They're
and all
just
across
gone. There's
the
no
state,
symptoms.
It's very generalized across the state. I have a teleconference that I do every Friday morning, and I just got off of that, and we're still talking about that. All the county agents are talking about dieback on fruit trees.
Mm-hmm. Somebody asked about root rot and what does it look like if you've got a plant with root rot? Are there symptoms?
Typically, you'll see wilting symptoms. So the way the root rots function is they destroy root tissue, so the plant can't take up enough water, and that just leads to wilting above ground. You'll also typically see some sort of discoloration to the leaves initially, so it oftentimes looks like a fertility problem. But then you'll get the wilting and dieback, and then if you take a look at the root system, you'll see browning and discoloration in the roots.
And generally, for general public, the first response when you see the symptoms of root rot is to give it water.
Yeah,
that's what it looks
part,
like. Yeah, that's what it looks like. And so you do get that discoloration. You'll get things starting to die back, and you think, ooh, this didn't get watered. And no.
Then you water it again. And as I tell my master gardener students, I said, the root rot pathogens are doing a little happy dance in the soil because they really tend to do much, much better when we have wet soil conditions.
Yeah. Is there anything we can do to, you know, aside from being sure not to put additional water on?
Well, certainly if you have potted plants, having a well-drained soil, and if you're in a landscape setting, if you're going in, lots of times you can deal at least a little bit with root rot issues if you build a new home, to make sure that the soil that goes in around the home is well-drained. And we tend to get a lot of really bad soils that go in around construction. So anything you can do to add organic matter that'll induce better flow of the moisture through the soil is going to help. If you're dealing with potted plants, good drainage, don't overwater. And I have some pots of my own that are on a wall at my house that don't have any drainage holes. So unfortunately, they're going to get overly wet and eventually rot. But I kind of like the diseases, so it's kind of fun for me.
In the landscape setting, we have somebody who, for my clients, goes around and does treatment because we know which root rot pathogens we're dealing with.
Right.
Brian and I work closely on that, and in some of the places that we've had for years, we know what we need to do when this rears its ugly head, or when we know it's about to rear its ugly head. You can kind of see the writing on the wall before it hits. Yeah, and it is really not something that the average homeowner can treat.
No, that's
so it has to be done professionally and with good products. There are very good products out there.
And certain plants I would never treat. Herbaceous plants, oftentimes, if you end up with a root rot problem, it's well beyond the point of treating anyway, and the treatments are too expensive, so it's not worth it. But for woody ornamentals, if you catch the disease early, you can have a professional come in and make fungicide treatments. Mm-hmm. But it's critical to know which organisms you're dealing with, because the chemical controls are very specific in terms of their range. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get a proper diagnosis, you can spend a lot on chemical control and it'll be the wrong product and you spend a lot of money and don't get control.
And that's where working with Brian's lab makes all the difference in the world. You know, if you have something, you need to get it tested so that you know what you're dealing with, definitely.
And if you do have diseases, let's say there are going to be diseases, most every garden is going to have something. What should we do, or are there things you can do to sort of make sure history doesn't repeat itself, let's put it that way?
Certainly the big things that I talk about in gardens, particularly for herbaceous plants, but also for woody ornamentals, good fall cleanup, because a lot of the disease-causing organisms are going to survive in that old plant debris that's left over. And if you don't remove that from your yard, that those organisms are sitting there, and they're going to produce spores that will reinfect your plants next year. The other thing is to look at plant spacing in a garden. A lot of times, disease-causing organisms do better when there's a lot of moisture. So anything you can do to promote more rapid drying, particularly of leaves and of soil, will tend to decrease the level of disease that you see. So space things far apart, thin, divide plants and move them away from one another and allow more airflow in between
and
the
cleanup.
Leaves.
Yeah,
cleanup is really good.
Cleanup is huge. And then disinfesting yourself and your equipment in between your plantings also makes a huge amount of difference. If we were I was laughing. I have a huge 32-ounce bottle of rubbing alcohol in the car, and that's just one of many. And, you know, it's like, why are you carrying that around? Well, it gets dumped on everything. You know, I mean, I disinfest. So it gets put into a bucket, and things get put in there so that you're not transferring things back and forth. Now, with root rot, if you're not cutting the roots, you still have dead material on top that can actually have secondary infection on the dying plant material. So getting that up and out of there is kind of important.
Yep.
With a lot of my clients, it's kind of important that we treat it. You know, in the average lot, you can replace. Now, yeah, I say that, but I've been out trying to find some replacement plants, and there's not a lot of plants out there. After 2008 shakeout, we have a lot of garden centers that only have what they have. And that's it.
Yeah, right.
So there's not a lot of stock sitting around waiting for people to come in and buy. No one can afford to do that. So sometimes taking care of those things it's becoming a little bit more important than it was.
And our winter,
you know, even
also
5 years ago,
a horrible job on a lot of plant materials for commercial folks. So they have a limited supply of what's available.
And, you know, even if we do, as people who love plants, even if we do everything absolutely correctly and we treat them appropriately, we have them tested, Mother Nature is still going to slap us upside of the head and say, guess what? We're not going to stop raining, even though you did everything right. We're not going to stop raining. And so we do get situations that we didn't anticipate, and we just roll with it.
We have some callers online, but we have a couple of open lines for you as we talk plant diseases today with our two guests, Brian Huddleston and Liz Freemuth. Great to have them along. The number for you to call to join in is 1-800-642-1234. We have some photos already of plant diseases on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can go there if you've got a photo of a plant issue. We'll certainly take a look at it and try and identify it. I also, Judith posted a shot of my straw bales, the two straw bales with the tomato plants and the eggplant and the, what else have I got in there? Squash, buttercup squash, all growing very well. And there's a nice photo of that on the Facebook page as well. So just go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Carolyn in Green Bay has a question. Carolyn, hi.
Hi. I think you diagnosed my plant. I have a currant bush. It's a black currant bush.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got it from a mail order company. And it's usually done beautifully where I have it. And I really don't do anything to it except cut back the dead branches if there are any. And I usually get gallons of black currants from the one bush. But from what you described, I think it has root rot.
Okay.
So I'm thinking maybe given that, would the best thing to do is just dig out the entire plant and do something to the soil before planting something new there?
Yeah, the unfortunate part with if it is a root rot problem is there's not much you can do to the soil other than try to improve drainage. The chemical treatments are really designed for being applied to the plants. when they're in place.
And
you had a lot of branch dieback on the shrub over the winter? Was that what happened?
No. Actually, I was surprised to see there was no branch dieback on winter, just a little bit. And this spring, when it came out, it was full of fruit and beautiful green leaves. And within the last 2 weeks, the leaves started yellowing, the fruit started shriveling, and then some of the leaves have little brown patches on them, and some of the branches have totally died, so that when you cut off the branch, you can tell the wood is dead.
Mm-hmm. How old is the shrub?
8 years old.
Okay, and you do continually cut it back, take out material that's extraneous.
The old branches. And I have a red currant bush, and I planted it 5 feet away, that looks absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. The soil is similar, except for the fact that the red currant is a little bit higher, mm-hmm. and the black currant is a little bit lower, so that possibly
it could stay
a little damper.
Are you seeing any standing water around the base?
No. One of the things about where I live in Green Bay is our soil is nothing but sand.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that water retention is usually difficult to achieve. But I do have mulch here, and I think with the amount of rain we've gotten, I haven't watered at all. And usually these plants are somewhat
dry.
What is it planted around? Do you have any walnut trees around there?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Okay. Any neighbor?
I'm just looking at the trees out here. We have maples. We have
no black walnuts.
There's a couple of issues with currants. They can get verticillium.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
But it's been in 8 years, and I would expect to see it at year 4 or 5 at the most.
And the branch dieback that you're seeing, is it pretty general across the canopy, or is it sectional? Is it just a part of the shrub that's dying back?
No, it's not sectional.
I wonder if that's collapsed.
The branch in the middle died completely, and that's the one I
got. Yeah. You could have a root rot problem, but I'm also wondering whether you had some root damage over the winter that's just now showing up. We are seeing this a lot on fruit trees and shrubs that, you know, even though they leafed out and looked fine for a while, they are starting to collapse. And we have looked at some root tissue from these sorts of trees, and we find occasional root rot pathogens, but nothing in sufficient quantities for us to think that it's really a root rot problem. The only way to tell for certain would be, if you're interested, get a root sample into our clinic. We can test to see what's there, but we may not, just be aware that we may not find anything.
Yeah, and I will tell you, historically, I've not had the best success with black currants. They are not as strong as the ones we see a lot, which are going to be the red currants. And generally I get like about 5 years out of a shrub and then they go.
My red currants look perfect.
Yeah.
Well, and the fact that these came out early with a strong appearance is very similar to what the cherry trees were doing too, before
apples.
They collapsed. Yeah, and the apples, that we did see an awful lot of that, and they looked like they were going to be fine.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was just total collapse. But I would say send a sample up to Brian so he can take a look at it.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at plant diseases today with our two guests, Brian Huddleston and Liz Freemuth. Brian is director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Liz is the owner of the Garden Hole, and she does concierge garden services, horticultural services, a lot here in Wisconsin, but across the country as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks very much for listening in for this edition of Garden Talk. Next week on Garden Talk, Karen Johansson will be with us. She'll have some great advice on midsummer gardening and what to think about as you move into the later stages of the growing season. That's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, Brian Huddleston and Liz Freemuth are here with some great information about diseases in the garden. Lots of questions coming up and lots of photos on my Facebook page. Here's one from Brianna. These three roses of Sharon were transplanted August of 2012. They were well watered, did fine last summer. This year, the one on the far left is stunted. Its leaves are yellowing. It doesn't have flower buds. Is there any way to help that? And you can definitely see that it is not thriving compared to the other two.
And then it could really be something in the soil, but it could also be some added pressure. When I look at shrubs like that, that no matter, you know, wherever you got them from, you stand three side by side, they're not going to develop the same. Like humans, they all have their own genetic code. They're gonna do what they're gonna do. But the beautiful thing about these is you can hack and whack to your heart's content, and they will respond. They do flower on old and new wood, and we are still a little ahead of schedule for putting flower buds on. So I would say, cut away. What you don't want to do, if it's a single stem shrub, you don't want to cut the only stem, because that you may get rid of it at that point. So if you've got a multi-stem shrub coming in there, it's a little difficult to tell from the picture what it is. But I would say go in and try and even them out a little bit. On the one on the far left, as we're looking at it, that's got the dead branches on the top, what you might want to do, because it's only been in for a couple of years, is to dig around the root zone and make sure that you don't have circling roots going on and things like that. It will throw it back a little bit. It will stunt its growth slightly. But at this point, if it continues to do that and you want them to look similar, you're going to have a real issue with that. It's better to find out now and maybe put a new one in. But again, these are nice hack and whack shrubs. You can cut them to your heart's content, and they should respond fairly well.
There we go. We have Paulette in Grays Lake, Illinois, next with a question. Hi, Paulette.
Hi. I have a different kind of a plant problem. It turns out that we have to replace our concrete porch and front stairs. And, of course, I have fully mature endless summer hydrangeas all around the porch. And the contractor said they're going to have to be moved. And so they're doing wonderfully well. I planted them 2 years ago. This is their third summer. They came through the winter okay. They're blooming like crazy, the big pink and blue and white blush flowers, and they're doing really well. So what do I do?
Do you know where you're going to transplant them to?
Well, that's the other problem. This is right in front of the house is the ideal spot because it's partial shade. And all around the rest of the house, there's a lot more sun.
And how many plants are we talking about?
Three.
Okay. What I would suggest if you want to put them back into the same area would be to dig them out, put them in fairly large pots. Go to the garden center and get yourself some fairly large new pots. Don't use old plastic that's been laying around somewhere. Just get some new pots, get some decent soil, nice light soil in there. Put them into the pots and then transplant them back in the ground. If they like that area, consider yourself lucky, because my experience with endless summer is either they're happy or they're tremendously unhappy. And if you have a spot that they're doing very well in, put them in pots, set them in a similar area of light, water them, fertilize them, and then when it's time to put them back in, pop them back in.
Those are hydrangeas, by the way.
They are. And they're the ones that will come back from the root, and they are pink unless you've got nice acidic soil or you treat them. And again, either they're happy or they're tremendously unhappy. And I would say just take as large a root ball as you can. And that's why you want the biggest pot that you can find. So just an inexpensive plastic pot, but a new one, so that you're not introducing any diseases to the roots. And water it plenty. When you dig it up,
don't skimp on the water.
Don't skimp on the water. They love the water. Do not do as the old wives thing says and wait until they wilt to water them. Do not do that. And once they're in containers, you really do need to fertilize a lot more than what you would suspect, because you're washing that fertilizer through the pot. So keep it nice and healthy, keep it watered, and you should be okay. You're going to lose some of the stems, but you should be able to save it if you take enough of the root.
There we go. Thank you very much for calling, Paul. I appreciate your call. Let's turn to the Facebook page again, because we got another photo up, Brian. This one from Mark, who says, my basil is having issues. And as we look at that photo, it certainly does look like the basil's having issues.
That's not any basil I'd want to eat.
I'm very suspicious about this one, because I've seen these symptoms before. What I would suggest to the person who posted this is go out to those leaves that are yellow and flip them over and look on the bottom surface and look for kind of a grayish purple fuzzy material. And if you find that there, it's most likely downy mildew, which is a very common disease on basil. And that one, unfortunately, there's not much you can do other than to take the healthier looking leaves and make pesto out of them. Yeah, just and remove the plants, quite frankly. At this point, they look pretty bad, so I don't think there's much to salvage there.
No, and basil right now is easy to find. So, you know, typically, unless you're doing 3 acres of it, you can actually get a replacement.
Although I did have a grower come in from a local nursery or greenhouse who had just brought in some basil from a supplier and put it in amongst the stuff that they already had, and the plants that he had just gotten in were infected.
So. Yeah, I'm one of those plant choppers that nobody likes to see. I check under the leaves,
yes,
I check the stems, I take the plant out of the pot, I do the whole thing. You know, for my $1.89. Well, actually, it's like $4.99 now that you that you pay for them. But you do want to know what you're bringing into your
and
yard.
You definitely need to know whether you're bringing in disease material, because that's an easy way to introduce pathogens into your landscape.
You have another photo here from Dunhaven Farm. What do you do with old, old composted manure impiled in central Wisconsin? You plant cube curbits of every variety all around the pile. Extremely easy gardening and unbelievable harvest. That's for sure. That's a pretty. That's a cool picture. Listen, if you're listening in, go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and take a look at some of these photos. We've got some plant disease photos, and then some kind of good success stories as well. Here is this one. This is on a plum tree. It looks like a yellowish, almost. It's hard to say what it is growing.
But I don't know if that's growing so much as, to me, it almost looks like chemical damage.
Actually, I'm wondering if there are a little, if I can kind of see what look like maybe some projections coming off the bottom surface of the leaves, which may mean that it's an insect gall of some kind. So I would flip those leaves over, and it looks like it might be something called spindle gall.
I see
gall.
Some leaf puckering on there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering whether underneath those yellow spots are little extensions of the tissue that might be insect-related.
Get up closer with your photos, people. We like up close.
Yeah, here's this. We may or may not. I don't know. Well, here's some bugs. The person would like an ID on this.
I can't tell.
I can't tell
from the resolution.
Not good resolution. I can't either.
No, but given that.
I would suggest sending this to PJ.
That's what I would do, too. Send it to PJ. I actually have seen that, and it's not close up enough for me to ID, but there are... It almost looks too big for aphids, because I have seen them covered in red aphids.
I would send it to PJ Leach, who's the new insect diagnostician, and his email is P. Leesch, L-I-E-S-C-H, at WISC, WISC.edu. And he's very, very good at doing IDs from photos.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
We have Ruth and Mineral Point up next. Ruth, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you for the show, Larry. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling not with a disease problem currently, but I'd like to prevent disease. I have a Japanese lilac, which was... advertised to not grow over 5 to 6 feet tall, and it's now
that's funny
10 feet tall, and I need to trim it back, and I don't know when to do that. Can I do that now? Do I wait till the fall?
Do you like the blooms on it?
Oh yeah, it's terrific.
Is it blooming? Is it an early lilac or is it late
lilac bloomer? So it's actually hummingbirds actually seem to come around it. That late.
Can you tolerate it for the bloom season this year?
Oh yes.
Should be
then
done
after
almost.
The Japanese sometimes they can be a little bit later in the summer, early versus late. As soon as it gets done blooming, go ahead and cut away on it. If you wait any longer than that, you're going to cut off the buds for next year's blooms. So go ahead and give it a whack. On these, if it is a tree lilac, do not do drastic pruning at the ground level for rejuvenation. It will not rejuvenate, and you will control the height beautifully. It won't grow.
Height of zero, yes.
Yeah, zero growth. But you can go ahead and cut after the blooms, and they'll respond fairly well. Use basic pruning techniques with this. So you want to cut slightly above at a 45 degree angle above an outward facing bud, and you should be able to see that on it so that you get growth going outward rather than towards the center. And any time you need to control for height, keep in mind you are going to be controlling forever. So if it's not something that you're happy with that you have to do the pruning on, I would suggest maybe thinking about replacing it with a dwarf variety. And, you know, it could have been that you got the wrong one, you know, or an incorrectly labeled. But oftentimes some of the new ones that are coming out there, we may not know the full height until we get down the road.
And I always take those measurements with a lot of salt because I've seen so many shrubs that are advertised for a particular height and they end up being much taller. Mm-hmm. Some other things I would suggest when you go to prune is only do that when it's dry.
Yes.
Not when it's wet and rainy, because those open wounds are potential entry points for disease-causing organisms.
But if you do clean equipment.
Clean equipment. So your pruning tools, you should get some 70% alcohol. So rubbing alcohol will work quite well. And use that as a dip for about 30 seconds. And the best of all possible worlds, I would do that between every cut on the tree.
Mm-hmm. And especially with a lilac, that if you want to keep it around, because they can easily contract something you moving your equipment around.
But I love the smell.
Oh, they are.
It is heavenly, isn't it?
I'm telling you, in our neighborhood, I'm doing my little 3-mile jog in the morning through every block. Had at least one.
Do you jog slower when you smell it or faster?
I slow down. Thanks, Ruth, for calling. Appreciate it.
Good luck with it.
Yeah, we have a photo again. I'll just go to that on my Facebook page again. This is of a plum tree, and we've got some issues on the end, the butt end of it. The tip end of it, I should say. Any ideas? Again, we've got a little bit.
We looked at this earlier before the show, and we're wondering about whether the initial problem was some sort of insect boring into the fruit, and then there's a lot of oozing coming in, and that could be from secondary organisms. There's some bacteria that can get into
and
plums.
Those spots are very discreet for any kind of other organism that's not doing physical damage, and the fact that you've got ooze coming out says it's in the interior tissue. So,
I mean, the other thing that might be interesting would be to check that fruit for calcium levels, because although I think a blossom end rot is a vegetable problem, we have occasionally seen it on fruits too, and it is on the blossom end where you're seeing some issues.
There's a little bit up at the stem too.
But
the majority of it is definitely at blossom end. And with the weather that we've had, that would be kind of interesting to take a look. We think odd things are interesting.
And there's likely to be some blossom end rot around this.
I got a whole box full from a commercial grower yesterday. I'm saving
a lot of cracking.
I teach a class on Monday morning, and my students will get to see that on Monday.
That should smell good by Monday.
Oh, yeah. Sharon Viroqua, what's on your mind?
Hi. I've got two questions, and I think you may have answered the first one. I've got a candy mint crab apple, and it is a little too large and needs to be pruned back so that we can walk around it. And I'm just wondering if I do that now, if I'm opening it up to too many potential risks for infection.
Pick a nice dry day for that, and you should be fine. I do summer pruning all the time on things like that.
Yeah, I tend to, in general, recommend winter pruning. I just from a disease standpoint, that's my preference. But again, when it comes to flowering trees, depending upon when they have set buds, then, you know, summer pruning is an option. But be, again, very cautious when you're doing that it's not wet.
And I kind of approach it from sort of a practical, kind of a Darwinian approach that if they can tolerate, they deserve to live in my yard. So if I'm picking a nice dry day and I'm using good cleanliness practices, that if that kills them, they probably didn't need to live there anyway. But crab apples will be okay with
that.
And sometimes,
hardy.
Yeah, they are. And you just don't, if it's a specimen that is making you happy and it's happy where it's at, you don't want to stress it out. But they'll respond okay.
There you go.
Great.
Thanks, Cher.
I'll just wait for a drier day. And my other question is, I have several magnum echinacea, and the first blossom, they all have their petals, but all of the others have no pink petals. And I'm just wondering, is that Aster yellow?
Are you seeing a lot of...
Do I pull up the plant, and then what could I plant in that area?
Are the remains of those flowers that you're seeing, are they kind of leafy and green?
Yes, they're all... Yes.
Yeah. Then that's most likely Aster yellows. That's a very typical symptom. You'll get these either very strappy green, what would normally be the purple ray flowers, and then the cones tend to be very leafy and green as well. And that's what's called a phytoplasma disease. It's a bacterium-like organism that's moved around by leafhoppers. And once you get that into the plant, it's there pretty much forever. And the best option, unless you're me, who likes these sorts of things and thinks they're cool, you remove them from your garden and replace them. And you should be able to replace the plants right away. You can put another echinacea in that area right away if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not going to, it's not a soil-borne organism.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Cher. Sue in Oconto County, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Yeah, hi. We have apple trees in our garden, a Duchess and a Wolf River. The Wolf River seems to be doing fine right now, except for we haven't had apples on it for years. That's one. And then the Duchess seems to be suffering from that dieback, that winter kill or whatever. It has a few leaves on it and no blossoms this year. It's struggling. My husband wanted to know, is there any hope? Should we just take her out? Or should we trim it back and hope maybe that it comes back next year?
You can certainly trim it back, and this has been a debate. I was talking with our fruit pathologist in my department who had done some work with some commercial groups recently, and they were debating this issue on what to do with trees that sound exactly like yours. So they came out, or they struggled leafing out, or they came out and then died back. And should you prune and try to help them recover or not? And it's really unclear exactly what to do, because it could be by pruning back, you'll stimulate additional growth and the trees will be fine. On the other hand, there may be such systemic damage in the root system that even if you prune out the branches, the trees will continue to decline. So I would say it really is up to you and how much effort you want to put into the tree. If you want to try to prune it back for now and see how it does, that would be great, but don't be surprised if it continues to decline and you'll eventually have to remove it.
Yeah, and I worry about the secondary problems coming in, that if your Wolf River is doing fine other than not blooming, and that's not that uncommon for a Wolf River every few years to get a good crop. Mine does every 2 years. It'll get a good crop. This year it suffered. It's not going to have, it doesn't have any apples on it at all. But if it's not in a spot that is prominent in your yard, you might want to do a wait and see, but do expect that eventually you may have to get your chainsaw out. It's not going to make you happy, and it's not going to be an attractive tree, but it is really unclear as to what's going to happen.
And
with
there are
these
potential issues.
What's your tolerance level?
That the tree will be stressed to the point where there are other disease causing organisms that can move in. And up in your area, since you're so far north, one of the pathogens that we know is up in that area is our malaria, which is a mushroom-producing fungus that will infect trees, and it tends to come in to trees that are stressed. So there's certainly that possibility as well. So it's kind of up in the air of exactly what you do, but I wouldn't blame you if you decided that this is way too much effort and just remove the tree.
Applewood really is very nice for smoking out on the grill, so you might want to consider that.
Hang on to it.
And woodworking,
use.
Too.
Yes, there you
there
go.
Are woodworkers that like applewood as well.
There you go, Sue. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's give Melissa in Eau Claire a chance to join us, too. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
We are just amateur, starting out gardening, planting different flowers and whatnot. And we picked up a fuchsia from a local greenery here in Eau Claire. And it's beautiful, and it looks wonderful. It seems to be healthy. It's got massive, beautiful flower buds, but they absolutely refuse to open. And nobody can seem to tell me how to fix this.
What do they look like when they refuse to open? Do they turn brown and fall off, or do they just like stay unopened?
They start out and they mature to a full, like a full blossom, and stay there for a couple of days and then just fall off.
And do you know what type of fuchsia it is?
I don't. I'm so sorry.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Like I said, we're just starting out gardening, and no one can seem to tell us what to do with this beautiful fuchsia. It would be so wonderful if we could get these flowers to open, but it's
okay, so what are you doing for water and fertilizer and sunlight? What kind of situation do you have it in?
It's in a partial shade situation. It gets nice morning sun, and in the afternoon it's in the shade. You know, we're watering it usually every other day. You know, we're just testing the soil and making sure it's not overwatered. Is that maybe not enough or too much? Or
What kind of a container is it in? Is it plastic? Plastic
yes,
pot?
Just a plastic hanging container.
Okay, and when you check it for moisture, what does it feel like when you think it's time to water? Does it feel dry or does it feel moist?
Maybe just a little bit on the drier side, I would say. I mean, we try not to, you know, we certainly don't let it get, you know, dried out or anything.
Okay, yeah, because so far we've had really good weather for container gardening because we haven't had to water as much as what typically we would. But I've noticed over the last week and a half to 2 weeks that we really do have to pay more attention to those containers. The wind and the heat have been drying things out, even though we've had rain, and the rain has been sporadic. Sometimes it gets in containers, sometimes it doesn't. Are you fertilizing at all?
Yes, we are.
Okay, and what are you using for fertilizer and how often?
Just the Miracle-Gro at the store.
Okay, that's there's no wrong answers. Don't worry. It's okay. Just trying to figure it out.
You do sound very tentative and like you think anything you're going to say is wrong.
You know what? New gardening, go for it. Go for the gusto. You're doing fantastic. You're giving it a whirl. Life is good. It's A-okay.
We're just starting out here.
And you're doing fantastic.
And the
don't
only
worry
way you become
about
an
it.
Experienced gardener is to start as a beginning gardener.
You
so.
Know how many plants I've killed in my life?
No.
I should be in jail for the amount that I have killed to try and get it right. Don't worry about it.
Everybody's got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And you don't know what you're doing wrong until you do it way wrong. But I think you're okay. But what you need to take a look at is how you're watering, and maybe add some fertilizer in there for a flowering plant. So it may have a little bit too much nitrogen. The Miracle-Gro typically has a little bit more nitrogen in it, doesn't it? I don't know I haven't looked at a label in a long time, but try and get something for blooming plants and then follow the directions on that. You might even want to just water once a day. And if it's in a plastic pot, what I would do is lift it out if you can to make sure that the water is actually draining out of the pot. Typically, that won't cause the buds to abort, the flower buds to abort. But if it's not draining properly, the health is not going to be good. So just kind of pick it up and make sure that the holes are actually doing their job and you're getting excess moisture draining out. If you are, typically for fertilizer on containers, you're looking at every third watering, you should be fertilizing. And if you have high nitrogen, that's going to promote vegetative growth. Again, not something that I would expect to abort flower buds. But then also, if you want to, without knowing what cultivar you're dealing with, you might want to look it up. See if you can find the label or the sales, or go back to the greenery and see if they've got another one there with a label on it so that you can look up exactly what it's supposed to look like. I have not seen any that don't open at least a little bit.
That was my thought. That it was a variety that's been bred to do that because some people just have balloons.
To just have balloon looking things on them. And if they're not turning, if they're not rotting off, then I don't look at insect or disease issue on the blooms. So I would say go back to the greenery and see if you can find out what that is. And I think you'll get better answers. Yeah.
And one other thought, since it's in a pot, would be because it's hard for us to figure out exactly what's going on because we can't see the plant. You do have a horticulture agent for UW Extension in Eau Claire County. And so you could actually just take the pot over to the county extension office and have her look at it. Her name is Erin LaFave. and mm-hmm. see if she has any thoughts about it as well.
Mm-hmm. That's a good suggestion.
And with a new gardener, you can't do too much homework, seriously, no. because there's so right. much there's so many cool things out there, and you may have that odd and unusual plant that's what it's supposed to do, and we don't know that. But good luck. You're doing fine. Don't worry about it. You're doing fine.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at plant diseases today with Brian Huddleston, Director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the UW-Madison, and Liz Freemuth, who is the owner of the Garden Hole, where she does concierge horticultural services across Wisconsin and the country, for that matter. Larry Mueller here for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at diseases in your garden, plants today with our two guests, Liz Freemuth and Brian Huddleston. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, thank you so much for listening in for this edition of Garden Talk. Questions? Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, especially if you've got a photo that you want to share and want us to take a look at, see if we can identify what issue, or maybe you just got a nice garden photo you want to show off. That'd be fine, too, at The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Our phone lines are completely full, and we're also getting several email questions, including one from Andy from Burnett, who has this question. He's wondering if you have any advice on keeping a well over 100-year-old grapevine producing and healthy. Produces many grapes now. I want to keep it that way. It's growing on my windmill in full sun in the middle of my yard. One thing I would say right off the top of my head is that we do have, Extension has a wonderful publication on growing grapes in Wisconsin that is excellent.
Right.
How far up is Burnett?
That's way far north, that's northwest. Way north.
Okay. Is there trial gardens up that way?
Yes, it's Spooner.
Grapes? Yeah.
Kevin Chesow is the county agent that would be the county agent for Burnett County, and he's located in Spooner.
You know, I have to say, if somebody's got a 100-year-old grapevine producing and looking healthy, I don't know if I'd want to be the one that tells him to change anything he's doing, quite frankly. Right. But pruning is extremely important, and how to prune mature grapevines is an art. And you want to see how old grapevines are done, go to Willersheim Winery and take a look at some of the ones that they've got there.
I do think Kevin sometimes holds grape pruning workshops at Spooner, so I would definitely give the Spooner Station a call. And if you do a web search on Spooner Agricultural Research Station, you should be able to get contact information.
Yeah. And, you know, as long as they're not particularly prone to diseases, then I would say continue to do what you're doing and maybe almost all of them could stand to be thinned out slightly, but without looking at it, it'd be hard to say what do you take off and what don't you without taking a look at the growth habit of the grapevine.
Sounds like a pretty darn healthy grapevine to me.
Yeah, yes, me too.
That's wonderful.
Does that produce wine, I'm wondering? What do they use it for? What kind of grape is it? All kinds of questions that come.
Yeah, all kinds of questions, but they will remain unanswered as we turn to Kurt in Marshfield. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for calling.
I think they wanted answers. We asked questions.
Hi, Kurt.
Hi. Hey, I got some trees. One's a plum, and the other ones we call them like choke cherries, and they get like these, some kind of disease that grows off of them every year. There's apple trees right by them. They might get it, but not near as much. It looks like a little finger almost, and it usually starts out green, and then it goes red. It'll get like a, I don't know, quarter inch off the leaf.
Does it look pretty cool?
Yeah, it looks kind of neat. But
we have an odd sense, again, of what's neat and what's cool.
Yeah, that sounds like we talked a few minutes ago from a photo that had been sent in about the possibility of something called spindle gall. And from what you're describing, it sounds like that may be what that is. That's a little insect gall that's formed on the leaves. And there are several different types of insects that can produce these on different types of trees and shrubs. They are a cosmetic problem, and so don't lose any sleep over having that. That's not something to worry about.
And by the time you see them, it's too late to treat for them anyway. So if it's something, and they run a cycle like many other insect populations where some years you'll see an awful lot of them, and then you won't, it'll decline slightly, and it'll go down to about nothing, and then you'll see it come back up again. It'll cycle in and out of high population. But unless it's something that's really detrimental to the health of the plant, it's not worth.
And usually it's not.
Yeah, definitely, no. And I I just consider those things a reason to go out with a glass of iced tea or wine or something and, you know, point it out to the neighbors and say, look what I have. Because there's really, again, once it shows up, there's really nothing you need to be doing about it that would be effective.
There we go, Kurt. Thank you for calling. Carol in Black River Falls, hi to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Every year I have trouble with iris borers in my irises, and I have a lot of irises, and I go through the whole thing of, you know, I always make sure they're really cleaned out well, and I trim them down. Do you have any suggestions on how to treat?
I believe we have a fact sheet on iris borer.
You do, yeah.
Are you hooked up to the internet by any chance? Because
yeah.
I'm not an entomologist, so for me to talk about this is a little bit off my area of expertise. But we have a nice fact sheet on it.
Yeah, and there are several different products that you can use depending on what your mode of your preferred mode of treatment is. Diatomaceous earth actually does a good job with iris borer. But the caveat with that is that it is very small seed particles that sift through the soil very quickly. And so you do have to apply on a daily basis, if not twice daily basis. But what that diatomaceous earth does is this is very satisfying in an odd way. It slices up the body, the soft mm-hmm. body tissue of those critters. And yeah. So if you get it down at the appropriate time. Now, are these irises that you dig up and you clean them out?
I leave them in every year.
Okay, and that can be part of the problem because you will get conditions that are growing on those rhizomes underground that are going to promote the continued life cycle of the borers. So you may actually want to get those up and out of the ground, clean out the yucky looking ones, rejuvenate it, and pop them back in. And earlier in the season is actually the more appropriate time to treat for iris borer. Right now you're seeing the effects of it, but I think we're beyond the point where you can really treat like with the diatomaceous earth and actually mm-hmm. have success.
Okay.
If you want to read more about that and are hooked up to the internet, if you go to our UW Extension Horticulture website, which is hort.uwex.edu, and then just do a search on iris borer, mm-hmm. you should be able to find information on that.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yep, thanks, Carol. Thanks a lot for calling. And Liz in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have three questions. First off, I have two dwarf North Star cherry trees that did great this year, and I was able to harvest from both trees. However, one of the trees didn't leaf out as well as the other, which, listening to your other callers, I'm feeling kind of lucky. So I gave it some, I gave the one that didn't leaf out some, I believe it's sort of a vitamin for trees, and you add that to water and you do that. So I'm sort of happy with that. And my question about those cherry trees is, if we have as hard of a winter this coming winter, is there anything I can do in the fall to protect them from the winter? That's my first question.
Make sure they're well watered.
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We usually recommend watering into the fall on something that's broadleaf, like
to
a
hard,
cherry.
Up to hard ground freezing.
Yeah, I usually for those until they turn fall color.
For these until the leaves fall off. Yeah.
Okay. And about an inch of water per week. If you have evergreens that you're concerned about, then I would water those all the way until either we get frost in the ground or we get a significant mm-hmm. snowfall so you mm-hmm. really can't apply the water. So, but that would be the big thing, is make sure they're well hydrated going into the wintertime. And then the other thing you could consider would be some sort of something to insulate around the root zone of the tree,
can.
But you got to be careful with that.
Yeah, you can, because it is really more the roots underground that are of concern. You know, cherry trees, you can actually do a 2x4 or something like that, and you make a box that can go around the trunk, and that will do more than any kind of wrap that you could put on the trunk. But what you do have to be aware of is that when you provide a box that goes around a trunk of a tree, and, you know, you're looking at maybe like 2 feet high, and just so that it doesn't touch the trunk of the tree, you want plenty of space mm-hmm. in there. What you're also doing is making an attractive potential bed and breakfast. So you do need to put some bait in there so that you're killing whatever would live there. Because otherwise, if you have rodents move in, they can very easily stay there all winter and munch around and girdle the trunk of the tree. So with protection also comes responsibility that you need to take a look at that. That's about the only thing that you can do. I don't do trunk wraps because
we don't recommend those.
No, there's no reason
for it. Makes things too moist underneath there, and that tends to promote disease development. And just hope for a lot of snow very early before it gets really cold, because that's probably our best insulation.
And, if you put mulch on the root zone of the tree, just stay away from the trunk of the tree, because, again, that's a bed and breakfast potential. So you want to stay away from that. But that can actually help moderate what happens underground if we don't get snow and we've got major freeze.
But then
going
remove
on.
That in the spring
because
you put too much mulch down, then you tend to get the soil conditions are too wet, and that can promote root rots. And cherries tend to be prone to root rots.
So it's a happy medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I have raspberry bushes that are 3 years old. And on several of them, I've noticed that the very tops of them have wilted.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that could be an insect problem. I would look for a little kind of channel that's been eaten in a ring around the tops of those tips, because that could be what that is. And that's kind of a cosmetic problem.
Yeah, and quite honestly, with raspberries, taking off a quarter to a third of the cane is not going to hurt your production for the most part. And in fact, it'll actually help in the care. So I wouldn't even worry about that. And the publication that's out there on raspberries will tell you about it. Yeah. Yeah, it actually is. And again, that end of the cane where we see the fruit is not necessarily the most productive.
Talking today with Brian Huddleston. Brian directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Department of Plant Pathology. And also with Liz Freemuth, who previously a horticulturist at Walworth County, now the owner of The Garden Hoe, a passion for healthy and happy plants. She provides concierge horticultural services. Our guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller here, and on this edition of Garden Talk, we're looking at your plant diseases, if you have any. And even if you don't, you might be interested in some, as we talk with our two guests today, Liz Freemuth, previously horticulturist for Walworth County and now the owner of The Garden Hoe, and a passion for healthy and happy plants. She provides concierge horticulture services. And Liz, thanks for coming by.
Oh, thanks for having me again. Thanks, Brian, for tolerating me.
Yeah, Brian Huddleston, that's the tolerator, is the director of...
Ooh, that's a...
The tolerator. I could see it as a T-shirt.
Yes.
He directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the UW-Madison. Brian, great to see you again.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Well, we have lots of... photos and such on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And if you want to know what some of these diseases are, you could probably do well to take a look at what we have, including this one from Betty Lou, who has a crabapple tree. It's losing its leaves. Mm-hmm. Not sure if it flowered this year.
Does she have a cultivar listed on that one?
The
I can't see that.
Heavy rains caused a small river to run by it a couple of times. Is it water damage? The tree's over 10 years old and self-facing, and she does not say the variety.
Yeah, I can see what looks like a fair amount of spotting on the leaves, so I think it's most likely apple scab, which is the most common fungal disease that we see on apples and crab apples. And certain varieties are much more susceptible than others, and defoliation of a tree is not unusual if you have a susceptible variety. The question that I normally ask folks if they're having problems with apple scab is, how emotionally attached are you to this particular tree? And if they're not, and it's a problem that the tree defoliates every year, my recommendation is to do what we call basal pruning. So single pruning cut at the ground level, remove the tree, and then replace it with a newer variety that has resistance to scab. If it's a tree that you have a lot of emotional attachment to, then you need to start looking at modifying the environment. So pruning to thin and open up the canopy to better airflow. That'll allow more rapid drying of the leaves, and drier leaves tend to be less favorable for this fungus to infect. And then the other thing you can potentially do are fungicide treatments, but you need to start those right when the trees are leafing out. And you're usually talking about applications probably every week to 2 weeks.
7 to 14.
Yeah, and it could be the entire summer with the amount of rain that we've had this year. It could be the entire summer that you're talking about.
And
so that's a lot of work.
We've had it that even some of those that haven't been started until after the leaves start to emerge, we still have problems because if conditions are right when they're starting to crack open, that can be enough that you're beset with the problem the entire year.
We had perfect conditions this year for apple scab because we had a lot of rain right as trees were leafing out. And it's actually those initial infections very early that are the most important for having a real epidemic of the disease.
Rick in South Range has a question. Hi, Rick. Thank you for joining us.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for the great program. We have had a problem with our raspberry patch. It's probably a decade and a half old. We got the plants from a friend, and they thrived. They were sometimes five and a half feet tall and marvelous producers to the point that we'd invite the neighbors to come and get all you want. They were stunted last year, very, very badly stunted, maybe 18 inches tall. So we decided to just abandon that whole thing. You know, they almost became their own worst enemy because they were so congested and weedy. So we got a brand new garden, a raised bed garden, 15, 20 feet away, and we took 25 or so of the best plants we could find, although they were admittedly still pretty short, the ones we transplanted. And they're growing fine, but they're still stunted. They're only about 20 inches tall.
Yeah.
There are a variety of things that could cause that sort of stunting. There could be root rot issues that are involved. There could be some virus infections. Are you seeing any weird look to the leaves, or do the leaves look relatively normal?
The leaves look normal to me, but...
Okay. Mm-hmm. The thing is, if you ever want to reestablish...
Tiny berries, the size of green peas.
Yeah, and, I would say rip those out and start over fresh with some certified stock. Because once something gets into a planting and gets into, is that a picture of, are we looking at a picture of them?
This is a different one.
Or a different one. Once you've got that in and it's running rampant through your planting, you're better off just saying, you know what, let's start fresh. And then... Right. And really go and get some good certified plants and plant in there. And have you been pretty good throughout the years of taking out canes here and there, or do you just let it go?
No, we
you do pretty good.
Very, very religiously take out the old canes. And we move them 100 yards away.
Yeah, but if it's in there, it's in there. And because those things are so intertwined root-wise, I mean, that's their growth habit, that I don't think you're going to get away from having the problem. If you do, consider yourself lucky. But I don't know, if you went through the effort of building a raised bed, go through that little extra step and get yourself some certified plants.
Yeah, my concern at this point is that you may have contaminated the soil in that new bed, and you may need to replace that before you put new raspberries in, because the root rot pathogens that I'm talking about could potentially get shed into the soil. Some of the viruses that we deal with are transmitted by nematodes, which are small parasitic worms, roundworms that infect root tissue, and those could get shed into the soil as well. So you may want to consider, if you want raspberries in there, replacing that soil before you replant.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much.
Unfortunately. Yeah, unfortunately.
Thanks so much for calling. We have Grayson from Kendall sent on my Facebook page some photos of talking about raspberries here. Again, he says, I get berries, then they never fill out and they look moldy. It happens even in dry years. What do Brian and Liz, what do you think of that? And he's got the fairly good photos there, I think.
Can you expand them at all?
Yeah. And they happen like that. Did he say that was all the time? What we're looking
every
at, for those of you that aren't on Facebook,
they're very
we're
blotchy
looking at
looking.
Very blotchy. And I can't tell if that's mold on there or if it's just undeveloped fruit.
Kind of pale-colored drupelets.
Yeah.
You know what?
I'm not liking the leaf on that either. It's definitely chlorotic, but why would be the question? And the curling on it.
They never fill out, it says.
It never fill out. Couple of questions. And again, people will hear this from me again and again, and there is a reason why I mention it. Chemical use, whether it's on the yard or whether it's in a field that's even a mile away. Because I don't like the curling that I'm seeing on those, but without looking at the underside to see if we've got insects to deal with, I typically will look at that and say, what got sprayed where? And also because we've got discoloration on the fruit, and because it's across a planting, I wonder whether there was some lawn chemical, some 2,4-D growth regulator that was put on, or Roundup or something like that. Typically, Roundup won't cause that discoloration, but I'm not so sure about 2,4-D on the with
the other
fruit.
Thing I would look at would be fertility, if they have not done a soil fertility test recently, because some types of nutrient deficiencies
will
very odd leaf growth and influence the fruit development
as
well.
And if you look kind of in the unfocused area of the picture, you'll see a little bit more curling. And then there's also some real discoloration green, that bright, vibrant green in the bag that... that one needs a larger investigation to figure out what's going on with that
there's
one.
There's part of me that's thinking virus as well, because of the blotchy color to the fruits. We do see that. If a lot of the fruits that are kind of whitish like this are in full sun, it can be sunburn as well.
Yeah.
If it's real powdery, there's also powdery mildew that might give it that cast, and I can't tell from the photo what
it might be. And then the one on the bottom actually looks like it might be powdery, but the one on the top looks like it's undeveloped fruit. Yeah. Mm.
It could be a variety of things that are going on. It's very hard to tell some of these things from photos.
Yeah,
we had an email.
I wish I had a better answer for that one.
Yeah, that's too bad. But kind of an interesting picture, that's for sure. We had an email from Christy from Potosi. He's wondering about garlic, about the time the scapes come out. I noticed some of them were limp and yellowish. The tops have completely died back on some of them. I recently dug some to check out the situation. They're not yet mature. Those with the sickest looking tops were almost completely rotted away.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the very rotten ones, they still have intact root systems but are beginning to rot just around the edges. Probably nothing to be done to save this crop, but what about next year?
Yeah, it could very well be there's a fusarium plate rot, which comes in that area where the root systems come out, and that could be very well what you're dealing with, because that'll disrupt the root system, and then no water, no nutrients going to the tops of the plants, and that'll cause a dieback. And you've got to be very careful. I would not plant in that area again with garlic.
Yeah, and then I would also wonder whether this was purchased garlic or garlic that was rejuvenated from last year.
Right.
Because sometimes you can introduce it or reintroduce it into your area.
Yep.
Then with the amount of rain, this was Potosi, right? With the amount of rain out in that part of the state, you might have been a minor issue in years past. This year, the rain just exacerbated everything.
And your point about reusing cloves is an excellent one, because I've seen this carried over in cloves.
Yeah, and you know, really across the board, when you're talking about food production, go that little extra step. And I know we like to save seed and things like that. And if plants are healthy, it's fine. But if there's even remotely a little bit of a problem, it's going to exacerbate over the years, and it's going to be wasted effort. Mm-hmm. We don't need wasted effort.
Jackie in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. You would not want a picture of my Korean spice.
We would. We love weird stuff.
No, you would not. I called before it was time for it to bloom and talked about moving it because I wanted it next to a bedroom window where I could smell it. And it's been there 5-6 years, about 10 or 15 feet away. Well, this time, when it started to blossom, it only blossomed on about a third.
Mm-hmm.
And now the rest of it looks, I wouldn't want to say what it looks like. Even the leaves, it's only about a third or two-thirds with only leaves. It only had a few blossoms. I didn't do anything to it except threaten it.
Did you prune it?
Nothing.
Nothing.
And the man that does work for me, I wanted to cut it out, take it out. And this is alive, that is alive, but it doesn't look alive enough to want to keep it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of with you, and you sound very frustrated with this thing, and you want it to smell nice next to your bedroom. What I would do, go shopping. Take this one out. If it's not doing well, take it out and get one that's healthy. It could be that something was severely damaged in the roots when it was moved. And oftentimes
it wasn't moved. I promised it I would wait until after it blossomed and move it.
So this has been in the same spot? You didn't move it?
It's been in the same spot. But, and like I said, I think it hurt me.
Vert.
Well, there's a possibility of verticillium. The other thing that supposedly does not happen that often on Korean spice viburnum, but is viburnum borer. It's usually fairly, but I know that Phil, before he retired, talked about seeing more cases of viburnum borum on Korean spice. So that's a possibility as well.
We actually have seen that.
Right down on the crown at the base, if it looks like rabbits have gnawed channels into the base of the crown or at the base of the larger stems, then I would suggest that that might be what's going on.
And I will give you a really easy way to test that. Walk up to the shrub and give the trunk a shake with your hand. It should not move. If you haven't moved that, and I'm sorry, I thought you said you had, but if you have not moved that, it should be very firmly entrenched in the ground, and you might get a little movement on the top part, but when viburnum borer has hit, the entire thing, you can move the root. It will actually be that bad. We've had plants where, yes, we've seen it, and we've just cut out the dead parts, and you can treat for it. But again, it's not a horribly expensive shrub to put in. And so it depends on your tolerance level. But go out and give it a shake. If it's loose, then get down on your hands and knees or have somebody do it while you point and check around to see if you've got some damage at the ground level.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll do that. Then it didn't hear me.
No,
no. Well, either it did or it's running in fear, one or the other.
Thanks, Jackie.
Good luck with it.
Calling. Oh, man. Keith in Pierce County, your turn. Hi, Keith.
Yes. I have a ground cover that's gotten loose in my woodlot. It likes shade. It's mint-like, but I don't believe it's mint. I believe it's called Lambian. And I'm looking for advice on how to get rid of it.
Is this like low to the ground? Is it variegated leaf?
Yes.
Square stems? What color flowers? Pink, white, yellow, something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yellow, and it spreads by runners.
So anytime you try and pull that up, you're just making more plants. So that's not something you want to do. Although cutting it off a couple of inches from the ground level and then going through with an herbicide will actually help take care of it. The weakest time, the plant's weakest time, is while it's flowering, right after it's flowering, or else early in the spring, right as it's coming out. Then you can also do it in the fall after a couple of hard frosts. Those are really the weakest points in the plant's life cycle that you can go out and hit it pretty good. But if you cut it off and then go through with an herbicide, it actually works pretty good. You're going to have to treat multiple times. Anything that's got runners on it, you end up treating multiple times to try and get rid of it. Again, yank it out, and you're going to make more plants, so you're just making more work for yourself. But again, cut off a little short, hit it with herbicide a couple of times. You should. Yeah. It'll take you a while to get it out of there.
Another question for you. Do you have other desirable plants that it's growing amongst?
No, this is in a lower-lying ground in a woodlot. Okay. You know, it's just that it's spreading, and it looks to me like it's going to just continue to spread.
It will. Yeah, it will. And that's one of those that lives up to its ground cover name. It's meant to cover the ground, so definitely. But you're going to be using a whole-scale killer like a Roundup-type product or, you know, something, a brush killer or something on that order. Do be very careful with temperatures and with your application. You might want to put up, if you've got trees that have thin bark, you might want to put up cardboard, old cardboard against the trunk so that you're not getting that onto the trunks and potentially hurting your trees. Temperatures, watch the label. Typically, if you've got temps 80, 85, you're going to get volatilization of anything that's left on the tissue, and you can't actually do damage. So, you know, look 2 weeks out at long-term forecast and then apply very carefully. Using a paintbrush, if it's not like an acre, using a paintbrush to swab those cut stems actually does a very good job, but it's very tedious when you're talking about a plant like that.
All right.
Is there a low temperature where it's too cold to apply herbicide?
It depends on it. There is, but it depends on who you talk to. I have had people say that when the temps were typically, I think label is about 50 degrees, but if it's applied, depending on the product, it actually can stay viable if the temps are going to go up. But you are looking at before we get down where temperatures are going to plummet in the fall.
So like mow it if I can in the fall. If I don't mow it, this is really rough ground. I mean, there's, you know.
Weed whack.
Yeah.
Weed whack. Or just apply to the leaves.
A foliar spray would work.
Foliar will work for something that low. It's just that you get better effectiveness if you've got freshly whacked off stems to hit it with.
And then I have to follow up in the spring. How early? As soon as it starts to grow? Or?
Yep. Hit it when it starts popping up.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's see. Robert has posted a photo of his 10-bale garden that is doing great. So
looks fantastic.
It does.
Yeah,
I'm coming for dinner.
Man, my makes my 2-bale garden look pretty small.
Well, we all have to start somewhere, Larry.
Yeah, so that's a really nice-looking 10-bale garden.
Oh, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Let's hear from Mary in Whitewater. Thanks for calling, Mary.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. I'm sorry I don't have any photos to send, but I think with my description you all will know what this is. I have 14 different kinds of clematis, from 8 years to 10 years old all the way to brand new ones, and I've never had a problem with viruses or fungus. I can treat for powdery mildew. I do know what it looks like, and I don't have many problems with it. And this is the first year that my 8-year-old, I have two of them climbing on one trellis together, a bright burgundy and a white, and the white one collapsed after blooming. And then 6 feet away from that is a brand new clematis on a trellis, and after blooming, it also collapsed. And by collapse, I mean that the leaves started to droop and wilt and gradually fade and turn brown all at once, not like a bore. And I'm wondering if there's a virus in the soil there, but I also can't understand why the white one intertwining with the burgundy one failed, and the burgundy one, also 8 years old, did not fail.
Yeah, you can have differences in terms of disease susceptibility based on not only varieties but individuals within a variety. So that isn't totally surprising to me. Of the things that I can think of on clematis that might cause a vine dieback like that, there are some that are what are called canker organisms that will infect individual vines and cause them to die back, and they just girdle a particular vine. There's also something called verticillium, which is a soil-borne pathogen that comes in through the root system, and it blocks the water-conducting tissue, and that can lead to wilting as well. In order to know for certain what might be going on, I'd have to see a sample in the clinic. There are also root rot organisms that can cause that sort of dieback as well. Again, to differentiate between any of those, I'd have to see a sample.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I have been hearing from growers that potentially there is a virus that is showing up on clematis. But last I spoke to them, you haven't seen it. So if you haven't seen it, then I don't know as if it's been formally diagnosed, or that's what they are suspecting it is. So I think we'll hear more about that as the season
progresses. Typically, I don't
think
of viruses as causing that sort of rapid wilting.
Yeah.
They tend to cause leaf distortions and blotchy color, and also you can get on the flowers, you can get striping that are caused by these viruses. But it sounds more like, from my perspective of the things I deal with in the clinic, some sort of fungal problem.
Thank you very much for calling. I want to get in an email here from John in Madison, regarding that fuchsia plant may not be blooming because those are seed pods and not buds. They look very similar. Mine are not blooming well now, but I just took off all the seed pods. Seed pods usually fall off, but this year they must have all been viable and gotten very big before they fell
off. Which could be. I mean, we don't know how old the plant is. So I'm glad he wrote in with that.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Well, Liz and Brian, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We're out of time, but I appreciate it very much. We'll look forward to another visit.
Thank you for having us
again.
I'd
love to. Yeah. I don't know why you keep doing this, but we love it.
Liz Freemuth, the Garden Ho, one of our guests today, and Brian Huddleston, director of the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. And if you go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we've got links to get where you can get to see them and talk with them a little bit more. So we really appreciate them. And appreciate you listening, and please stay with us. We have lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.